Interestingly, however, nobody else reported seeing any humanoid figures. Ron was amazed. Just thinking about what had happened to him sent shivers down his spine. His mind kept returning to one fact: what had happened during those 3 missing hours. Over the next few weeks, an amazing thing happened. Ron began to clearly recall the missing hours. Each day, more images flooded into his mind. By the end of the month, Ron had recalled most of what had happened to him on that fateful night. What he remembered astonished him. The ETs had granted his request. He had asked for a ride aboard the UFO, and they had given it to him. He was unable to recall how he was actually taken on board. His first memory was of finding himself already on board the craft, sitting on a silver-gray-colored bench that curved partway around the outer wall of the dome of the craft. 2 other adults sat on either side of him. Ron said hello to them, but neither responded. Both sat there staring straight ahead, without moving a muscle. Looking across the room, he saw 2 of the most beautiful people he has ever seen. Says Ron, one was a man about 6 feet tall, and the other was a beautiful woman about 5 feet, 8 inches tall. They both had on silver-gray jumpsuits that formed to their body not too loose or not too tight. It was all one piece. Even their shoes were a part of the apparel. There was no collar to the suit, but it went up to their necks. She had long, flowing brownish blonde hair down to about 1/3 of her back. It was shiny and very pretty to look at. She was very pretty and she smiled at me. He was very handsome and had blondish colored hair. They both had very blue eyes that were warm as they looked at me. Both of them looked perfect to me. They were beautiful to watch, and they seemed very friendly. Ron was in awe. Their jumpsuits were completely seamless and shimmered brightly in the light. They appeared to be in their late 20s. Both stood side by side, near a doorway. The man was waving his hand over what Ron assumed was some kind of instrument panel. At this point, the woman stepped forward. Ron automatically stood up as she approached. Says Ron, she came around and I walked up to them. She gave me a hug, which made me feel very welcome, and he shook my small hand. I felt very comfortable there and they were very friendly, almost as if they were relatives of mine. I thought in my mind that they must be married. They seemed to love what they were doing. They also seemed to love having me on board. I didn't say anything to them. It seemed as though they knew my thoughts, and I knew theirs. They appeared to me to be perfect people. I could not see one flaw in their faces. They seemed very happy with each other. When they looked at me, they always looked contented, and that they enjoyed what they do. I felt very comfortable and at ease. I knew they would not harm me in any way, that they just wanted to please me. Ron was in awe of the 2 space people. Looking around the room, he could see that it had rounded blue-gray walls. It was brightly lit and very clean. At this point, the woman stepped back to the instrument panel and waved her hand over it. The panel appeared to be very simple, with no visible dials or switches. Ron was amazed at what happened next. The man looked at Ron and motioned for him to move over to the left. Says Ron, as I did, I could see a window. It was panoramic in shape and about waist high, maybe 4 feet by 15 feet across. I thought immediately, this is where I saw them from the ground, looking at me. Ron realized that the man and woman had made the window transparent by manipulating the control panel. He looked out the windows, and was completely awestruck. Says Ron, it was wonderful. I could see stars, millions of them. They were very clear, clearer than I've ever seen them. I walked closer to the window. I felt as if I were watching a movie in a movie theater, but it was much more clear. I felt like I could touch the stars as they slowly moved across my view. I knew we were moving in outer space. We must have been going very fast because the stars moved to the left and right of me as we went forward. They were like diamonds. I didn't know what part of space I was in and I really didn't care. It had all my attention. I glanced back at the 2 humanoids, and they just smiled at me. I kept looking out the window, thinking, I'm really taking a ride in a UFO. I was so exhilarated and felt very special. I knew I was now in this UFO, and the pilots were giving me the ride of my life. I was so excited. I just felt at peace that these two beautiful people were answering my request. At this point, Ron's memory of what happened next becomes a little hazy. Something else may have occurred, but the details escape him. Says Ron, the woman and the man were still by the panel on the wall. This time only the woman was waving her hand over the panel. The next thing I remember is being on the ground, waving goodbye to them, not wanting to leave. I didn't even think of my family then. I was so caught up in this great adventure I was taking. I know there was much more, but I cannot remember anything else that happened during my 3-hour ride. Maybe one day I will. I just know that this will never leave my mind, and I will cherish it always. I often remember this incident over and over again. To this day it is still very clear in my mind. The encounter was, for Ron, a wonderful and awesome experience. He has no idea, however, why he had the experience, but his friends did not. Says Ron, I know there are many other worlds out there, and these were two beings from one of them who chose me to give a ride. Why? I don't know, except in my mind, I felt they were doing me a great service and enjoyed my company. As the years passed, Ron grew up, got married and had kids. On several occasions, he has encountered UFOs. As he says, since then I have seen many UFOs, some golden and egg-shaped, some ball-shaped. My children have also seen them many times. My daughter had a very close encounter with a bluish UFO that came right down the street. It flew right over her and my wife, only about 10 feet above their heads. Most of my family has had many sightings, none quite as intimate as mine. Nevertheless, they have seen them up close and are convinced of extraterrestrial life. Today, Ron has become a deeply religious and spiritual person. After much studying and reflection upon his experience, he has found, he believes, powerful answers to some of the most puzzling aspects of UFOs, such as their connection to God and religion. Says Ron, I know they exist. I know who they are and where they come from. I also know more about them, probably, than most people know. Being very religious, I always wondered how God and UFOs or aliens are related. They are not all as friendly as my experience has been, but they do have an agenda. There are many types of aliens. Most are just visiting and looking, while others are more aggressive. One thing I can say for sure right now is that they are all kept under close watch and scrutiny, and are allowed only so much interference with this earth. Ron's encounter with what appear to be perfect beings has also led him to believe that the earth will soon undergo a transformational event, the equivalent of a biblical rapture. Says Ron, now I know that God is the biggest factor concerning all life and how each play a part in the great and glorious plan of God. The whole story will unravel soon. Most will be surprised by the truth, and many bubbles will burst. It's all so amazing and wonderful and no one need worry. Today, Ron remains steadfast to his faith. As he says, all the answers to all the questions are available in the Gospel of Jesus Christ. Most will wonder what Jesus Christ and God have to do with aliens and other worlds. The answer is simply, everything. I can tell no more. Most will have to find out for themselves. But the truth is out there. I guarantee it. Chapter 11, Andy's abduction. It was 1978, and 13-year-old Andy Arens was in the bedroom of his home in the Netherlands. He lived in a tract of houses only minutes from a major city. It was a crowded urban area. Tonight was a school night, so he went to bed early. Sometime in the middle of the night, Andy's room flooded with light. He first thought that his older brother had entered and turned on the light, something he did often enough. Andy opened his eyes to see that his blanket was gone, and the light was so bright, he couldn't even see his room. At that moment he realized, he was no longer even in his room. He was somewhere else. I was lying on a metal table, Andy says. I looked up and saw this big window, and a bench in front of the window. It had round edges, and it was attached to the floor. And I thought, what's happening? Am I in a hospital? At this point, he wasn't scared, only confused. But the fear was beginning to creep in. I started to look around, and on my right, I saw two people, two beings, but they were very dark and I couldn't see their faces. He saw a strange, unrecognizable device on the floor. The walls, he realized, were rounded. The entire room was round, and although he saw no light fixtures, it was filled with light. "I don't know where it came from," Andy says. "Maybe outside through the window? I don't know." There was light everywhere. He knew he wasn't in his room anymore, but he still figured he was on Earth. "Then I looked to my left," he says, "and I saw this little being. I saw another one, and further, a third. And the third one was smiling at me, making a nice gesture." Still trying to come to grips with what was happening, Andy looked up. "I saw this thing above my head. It was a tube with two rings emitting a red-purple light, with a big needle in the middle. And it was coming down to my left eye." Now, Andy felt real fear and he began to shake his head, only to discover that he could only move it a few inches. Speaking fluent Dutch, Andy's primary language, the ET spoke telepathically, saying, "Don't be scared, this won't hurt." To Andy's relief, the being was correct. "I got this amazing feeling in my body and in my mind," Andy says. "I've never felt so good before." It was a sensation he'd never felt before or since, a feeling of absolute well-being. "Okay," he told the alien. "I trusted him," Andy explains. "I let it happen. I was waiting for it." The next thing Andy knew, his alarm clock was going off and he woke up in bed. He thought to himself, what a strange and realistic dream. He was totally exhausted, as if he had been up all night. That day, Andy, his brother and their parents were in the living room. Suddenly Andy's brother blurted out, "Hey, I dreamed I was abducted by aliens." "Me too," Andy said, jumping up. His brother looked at him curiously, but said nothing. Nor did they talk about it. At the time, Andy was still considering the possibility that it was all just a dream. His brother, Andy speculates, thought he was kidding. But he wasn't. Still he wondered, could it have been more than a dream? He recalled an incident which had occurred around that time, while he and his family were vacationing in Spain. They were on a speedboat in the ocean on a fishing trip. The water was clear and not very deep as they could see the bottom. Andy was looking over the edge of the boat into the water when he saw a black disc shape going underneath our boat. The object was about 6 feet wide, obviously a craft of some kind, and moving at a swift pace. "Look! Look!" he shouted out. Andy's father and brother looked over the edge of the boat, but by then the object was gone. Andy is not sure if this sighting happened before or after the incident in his home, but they both occurred close together and he feels they are probably connected. Andy remembered a few other strange incidents from around this time. One morning, he woke up and discovered a strange mystery. He was lying the wrong way in bed. Somehow, he had turned around 180 degrees, with his head at the foot of the bed, and his feet resting on his pillow. At the time, he assumed that he must have somehow turned himself around, but he couldn't imagine how. Now, he wonders if it was perhaps the ETs. Another time, he woke up to find that he had a severe bloody nose. There was a lot of blood, Andy says. It was puzzling, and he had no answers as to how such a thing could happen when he was asleep. Also, around this same time, he went to bed one evening and heard a strange beeping noise. He searched for the source, but no matter where he went, he heard it clearly and at the same volume. He finally realized it was inside his head. It only happened once, so he didn't think much of it. A few years later, at age 16, Andy left home to live with his girlfriend. They were given a couch which the previous owners didn't want because they said it was spooked. One evening, Andy and his girlfriend were sitting on the couch when they both felt it starting to shake. Then suddenly, the entire couch, with both of them on it, levitated about 1 inch, then fell to the floor. They both stared at each other in shock. "Did you feel that?" Andy asked. "Yes," his girlfriend replied. They decided to get rid of the couch. Both Andy and his brother were shy, sensitive boys. Following the UFO incident, Andy's brother began to get into trouble. Prior to then, he was very well behaved, and always looked out for his little brother. Once when Andy has mused out loud about trying to smoke a cigarette, his brother said, "I'll kick your ass." He was very smart, Andy says. He knew that smoking was not good, drinking and drugs were not good. He was very intelligent. But after that, he started smoking and drinking alcohol. At one point, Andy confronted him about it. His brother told him, "I can't cope with how it goes, here on Earth." It would be only a few years later, at age 24, that Andy's brother committed suicide. Andy feels that it's connected, at least in part, to their shared experience. He wonders if the ETs were interested in him because he is sensitive, and has a different outlook on life than many people. Like his brother, he finds it difficult to deal with the cruelty and evil of the world. "If I have a mosquito in my room," Andy says, "I take a glass, catch it, and I put it outside. I don't kill the smallest thing. I have respect for all life, for all people." He has an unusual affinity with animals, and finds that creatures both domestic and wild, seem to be drawn to him. As a child, they had a pet parrot who would let nobody but Andy near him. One evening, he woke up spontaneously. Looking at the fish tank next to his bed, his pet fish now began to give birth. Whenever he visits someone, their pet dog or cat usually ends up next to him. Andy grew up, married, had two daughters. He continued to think about his experience. And when accounts of UFOs and abductions came on television, he would often watch. One evening, he was watching a show about abductions and was shocked to see a witness drawing that portrayed the same exact machine he had seen in his own experience. He was so shocked by the similarities that he made several calls trying to contact the producers of the show. When he learned that abductees often have unexplained marks on their body, he discovered that he had several, including strange red spots that a dermatologist was unable to diagnose, and a scoop mark on his back. Many years after his childhood abduction, Andy was watching a movie when he had a sudden flashback to the incident. "I have this memory of floating through my window," he says. "I panicked because I thought I was going to fall." At the time, he thought to himself, "This is not possible." Floating about 6 feet above him was one of the beings who told him, "Yes, it is possible." The memory ends there. In another spontaneous flashback, Andy remembered walking along a corridor inside the object. He turned to one of the beings and asked him, "Where is my brother?" He doesn't remember what the being said. Following his childhood encounter, Andy never had another visitation. After all is said and done, he feels that the ETs are benevolent, and he feels a special connection to them, particularly the one who smiled at him. "I love them," he says. "I wish they were here now." Chapter 12. The UFO Guardians. Dolly Saffron's life was unusual from the moment of conception. Her father was an airborne ranger with a long distinguished military career. Dolly's mother was having difficulty becoming pregnant. She had been diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome. Doctors used radiation treatment and told Dolly's mother not to get pregnant for 6 months. 1 week later, she became pregnant with Dolly. It was a difficult pregnancy. Doctors warned that the baby might be deformed and have other health issues. Dolly was born in 1958, premature and weighing only 5 pounds. She was 18 inches long and had a full head of thick black hair. Given a clean bill of health, the new family returned to their home in Miami, Florida, not far from the Everglades. Thankfully, Dolly thrived. At 3 weeks, all her black hair fell out and came back in snowball white. As she grew, her hair became blonde. Dolly had surprised everyone by turning out to be a beautiful, healthy, happy child. However, the surprises weren't over. Strange events started to happen, and somehow, they always seemed to involve Dolly. It all began around 1960, when Dolly's mother was pregnant with her second child. Suddenly, Dolly would turn up missing. A search of the house would ensue. Sometimes they'd find her in strange places, locked rooms and closed closets. Other times they'd find her outside. This strange disappearing act occurred many times. Nobody could figure out how Dolly was getting through locked doors that she was too short to even reach. "It was very disconcerting," Dolly says. "They found me once 2.5 miles from the house, and all I had on was underwear. I was crying, and I couldn't explain to anybody how I got there." The strange experiences continued. Around 1965, Dolly was 7 years old and playing in the backyard. She lived on a big ranch with her extended family. She was lying in the grass gazing up at the sky when she observed something very strange in the sky. "I saw something coming down," Dolly says. "I thought it was a giant umbrella. And I thought I saw Mary Poppins. I was utterly captivated." At this point, Dolly doesn't remember what happened. "I don't know if that was planted into my head to not frighten me," Dolly says, "but after that I began having regular visits. They wouldn't come in broad daylight like that. But they would come at night." Dolly told her mother about her friends that visit at night, but her mother was unable to provide any information. She assumed they were imaginary friends, but was concerned because Dolly kept talking about them. One time, Dolly freaked everyone out with a remarkable display of telekinesis. "I was a very sensitive kid," Dolly explains. "I didn't like arguing, and I got real upset. I got so upset I started shaking. And the next thing we know, the closet opened and two hat boxes flew out at my aunt's head. And that scared the crap out of everybody." Other times, Dolly would blurt out that something bad would happen. Shortly later, the event would occur. It could be something as simple as a minor car accident, or somebody being very sick and rushed to the hospital. Dolly's father was highly placed in the military. He and Dolly were very close, and when Dolly started to have unusual experiences, her father recognized that something strange was happening. "My father took me to Hempstead AFB," Dolly says. "There was a program going on there, and there were lots of other kids and parents. I spent the next 5 days of my life being tested on all things psychic. My parents were notified that I had strong abilities, that remote viewing was one of my big talents, and that there was a program they wanted to put me in." Dolly's father was considering allowing her to participate when a friend of his at NASA alerted him that she should not participate, as the program would not be for her benefit. Dolly did not join the program, but from that point, her father spent a lot of time training her in other special abilities. He enrolled her in a karate class. "She is now certified in Krav Maga," he began to teach her about self-defense. He educated her in numerous areas of science. In 1966, at around age 8, Dolly began waking up to find herself inside a strange ship. She was there with a group of other children, waiting for something to happen. They were then taken out of the ship to what appeared to be another place. "Where we went had a lesser gravity than I'm used to," Dolly says. "It was almost an unimaginable place. I've never seen anything like it before or since. Very odd kinds of flora and fauna. There were these towers with huge ground terraces and we could either go in at the bottom and go up a staircase, or we'd all hold hands and we'd jump up and get in that way." Dolly was taken to this area many times. "The purpose of me going there was to learn," Dolly says. "We were being taught. It could be anything from philosophy, history, morality, responsibility. It was all very altruistic, some scientific, but most of the time I was being taught how to think altruistically. I was taught we were engineered, and that there was a lot expected of us. I lived a double life. Even though I was in contact with ET all this time, I grew up in the military. And I was strictly taught not to talk about it, that anything I knew was not to be spoken at all." By the time Dolly was about 14 years old, she had developed a strong interest in science and astronomy. She had a telescope and would spend many hours staring at the night sky, charting the moon and the planets and identifying the constellations. Her father worked for NASA as an architect and an engineer and would often take Dolly with him on his job to visit Cape Canaveral. He would often take her to the Universal Library and let her pick out any book she wanted to read. This helped develop her interest in astronomy. One evening, after staying up to almost 2 a.m., watching the stars with her telescope, she finally decided it was time for bed. But for some reason, she felt restless and instead sat by her window seat and looked up in the sky. Suddenly, to her amazement, it appeared that the stars were moving. "I saw about 40 pairs of stars that were moving. It freaked me out. I thought, my God, what am I looking at? Is it a stellar shower of some sort?" It instantly grabbed my attention. Then each pair of those lights went off into different directions. Two of them came down over our area, near Kendall. One went east toward Kendall, and the other went west where we lived, at the edge of the Everglades National Park. I watched it come down over the back of my house. It was dead silent. It changed color. It started out white, but as it came down, it turned bright red, orange, then yellow, then green, and then it turned a blue color. Then, as it came down over my backyard, it was a very bright metallic object. It was about 20-25 feet in circumference. It wasn't totally round, more spade-shaped, but rounded. And it had two port windows, and lights. And underneath it was a very big blue light. The object stopped and hovered over the trees behind the house, wobbling slightly. Dolly was amazed to see the trees whipping around as though being blown by a strong wind, and yet there was no breeze. Suddenly, Dolly got a cold chill. She was seeing a UFO, and it was looking right at her. When I realized what I was looking at, it scared me bad. I turned to get away from my window, and all I could think to do was dive down to the floor and go under my bed. Just as I started to make that turn, my entire room became shockingly bright white blue light. It was so bright it was blinding. I guess I passed out. That's the last thing I remembered. When I woke up, my pajamas were disheveled and not unlike before. I was disoriented and sick to my stomach. I was sitting on the floor trying to figure out what the hell had just happened to me. Finally, Dolly looked at the clock. Her jaw dropped in disbelief. It was already almost 6 a.m. She waited a short while until everybody began to wake up. She thought, how could this happen without someone in the house knowing about it? She was determined to ask, but wasn't sure how to proceed. She saw her mother. Did anything weird happen last night? She asked. Did you all see any weird lights outside? No. Her mother replied, giving her daughter a concerned look. What are you talking about? You didn't see anything weird, or hear anything? About 2:30 in the morning? No. Her mother repeated. Why? Maybe I had a weird dream, Dolly said. Dolly was at a loss. I sat down at the table, and I didn't know what to think. I just sat there. I thought, if I talk to her about this, she's going to think I'm a lunatic. I needed some more time to think about what had just happened to me. Each morning, the family listened to the radio to hear the daily news and weather. Dolly was amazed to hear the radio news start talking about UFOs. That night, a police officer in the Kendall Mall observed a UFO. After the newscaster finished describing the officer's sighting, Dolly's mother turned to her in surprise. Did you see something last night? I don't know, Dolly said. I might have. Well, what did you see? Well, Mom, I think I saw a UFO. Her mother looked a little shocked. Oh, you were probably dreaming, she said, dismissing the sighting. Dolly decided not to press the issue. She knew she had seen something strange. It was to be the first of many strange sightings in her life. It was shortly after this incident that she discovered a strange lump or object in the cartilage inside one of her nostrils. Convinced something was there, she kept worrying it until it became sore and inflamed. By age 17, she had become obsessed with getting the object out. Being well trained in handling physical pain, she decided to excise the object herself. I opened my nose up there, Dolly says, and pushed until it popped out. What popped out was freakish. It looked metallic, about the size of a grain of rice. It suddenly fuzzed over and then literally disappeared. I watched it disappear. Dolly cleaned herself up. She was baffled by the disappearance of what she had now begun to suspect was an alien implant. She soon had reason to believe she was right. I woke up the next day with something behind my ear, she says. She left the new object alone for several years, then one day decided to pull it out like she had the other one. Before I could get it out of my ear, it disappeared in my hand. Then I ended up with one in my leg. One time, as a young teenager in the Girl Scouts, Dolly had one of the scariest encounters of her life. She was on a camping trip in the Florida Everglades, and she and the other Girl Scouts were hoping to earn their fire-making badges. Unfortunately, It was a wet and rainy day. Dolly knew that it was going to be difficult to start a fire if she didn't have dry kindling and wood. So, after dinner, while there was still some light left, she went out to search for wood.